right, everyone. I have the pleasure to introduce Dustin Robertson. Dustin is the CMO of Drip, which is, if you've listened to this podcast or followed me for a while, you know that they are my preferred vendor of choice for all things email marketing and so on. So really, really happy to have Dustin here. And we're going to be talking a lot about marketing automation as it relates to you both currently and in the future, both for you, yourself and your clients. But before we dig in too deep, Dustin, welcome to the show and tell us a bit about who you are and what you do.
Great. Thanks, Brennan. And we're super appreciative of all the support you've given us. You're one of our biggest fans and smartest customers. So.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So I've been with Drip a little over a year. I started in April of 2017. And I came from a business-to-consumer background, so I'm predominantly in e-commerce. We started a website that eventually became backcountry.com in the 90s. And I just got a kind of a PhD in digital marketing growing that business through the 90s and then ultimately left in 2013. And since then, moved into online travel after learning digital marketing and e-commerce. I kind of wanted to go where the big boys play in that space. And that's online travel, which is a category that got penetrated online upwards of 90% very early on. I think software and travel were the first categories to go predominantly online. So did that. And as I was competing against Expedia, I kind of learned that there was a next level of data marketing going on the web and was looking for a way to replicate that. And there was no tools to do it. Expedia had built out their own system with billions of dollars and a massive BI team. So as I went on a process trying to find it, I then investigated where I should build it myself. And through that process, met the Lead Pages and Drip founders and discovered that they had a platform that possibly could accomplish this database marketing at scale for e-commerce marketers.
Awesome.
So that's kind of how I ended up here.
Very cool. Yeah. And I know we've met a few times at both when I was out there to do more of an internal talk for the team, but also at Converted last year. What do you think? So a lot of the people listening, I mean, the majority I told you before we hit record are consultants or agencies who are either interested in marketing automation, either for their own services companies, which I know is more B2B, lower volume, more high touch, but also a lot of them are doing big, e-commerce projects for their clients or doing kind of big B2C projects on behalf of their clients, who many of them don't actually know a lot of what you and I take for granted these days of like what's possible with automation, how that can help influence sales and how that can help just do a lot of different things. What would you think is kind of the central argument for why the typical agency or consultant or whatnot should be interested in adding marketing automation to their technical arsenal, to their skill set?
Yeah, I think what's happened, since we rewind to 2009, that was when we first started hearing that email was dead.
Right.
And that mantra kind of, and this is in the B2C world, I know B2B is slightly different, but it was dead as a marketing channel. It was going to decline, and we never really saw it happen. And while it wasn't growing rapidly, it was a steady high ROI channel always with very little strategic input into it. We were just casting blasting to millions of customers the same message, and that actually worked. And then what happened is Facebook and Google and retargeting kind of came on the scene. Having the email address became super valuable, and you could do a lot more than just send email. So I think the reason people should pay attention to marketing automation now is it's not just about sending email. If you have the email address, and even if you cannot send them email, they haven't given you permission, all of the marketing that you can automate in the other channels becomes much richer and powerful if you have the email address. So kind of the email address is the center of the universe for digital marketing going forward for B2B and B2C marketers. So basically, the agency that isn't really building up that muscle that we know how to take an email address and harvest the value out of it is probably going to get left in the dust.
So would you say then that the email address is almost like the single source of truth where we track what they bought, what they've maybe downloaded, what pages they viewed on your site, and so on, and we use that as both a segmentation profile, but also a way to just kind of observe at a macro level, like what a customer base or an audience might be doing or not doing.
Yeah, for sure, within your internal environment. But then externally, you can leverage the email address on Google and Facebook, for example, to run ads. So that's the part that's really, really changed, I think, is the fact that it's no longer just beneficial for your internal communication and in your environment. You can actually really increase your ROI on your advertising if you have the email address.
Right. So what are some things that you think companies or agencies should be educating their clients about in terms of, I mean, I think there are a few kind of givens, you know, that I think a lot of us know about, but to be honest, I have a lot of friends who run, say, you know, online stores that do fairly well. And I have one in particular who, you know, does really well selling online cushions online. And I asked him once, so he basically needs to lay off most of his team every winter because he sells outdoor cushions, right? For furniture outside. And no one orders that stuff in the wintertime. They wait till spring. So I asked him what he does, you know, correspondence wise, email wise to get back, you know, how does he communicate with his past customers? And he told me that the only emails he ever sent to his customers were the invoice emails when they buy. So I think there's still a lot of education that needs to be done in terms of, you know, educating clients about things like cart abandonment or doing this or doing that. Like, what are some of the things that you think are kind of the biggest movers or the biggest wins that the typical online business that is selling stuff online should be doing if they're not doing yet?
Yeah, I mean, the number one is the abandoned cart email. So just a quick background on why, you know, maybe your friend has only sent invoice emails is, you know, most of the tools that were available to e-commerce companies were designed to send millions of emails within seconds, right? The exact targets and Brontos and Yes Mails of the world. That's what they are built to do. They're built to send tons and tons of emails really quickly and get them into the inbox, mm-hmm. which is a special skill. But to break that down and then start to send, you know, triggered based emails like an abandoned cart, that's just not what their infrastructure was made to do. And so it's really difficult to turn that on within those platforms. And until recently, with Shopify kind of dominating the space and people building into that app, it's gotten much easier. But before that, it wasn't. And, you know, I was in the space trying to install abandoned carts, and it was just really difficult. So yeah, the abandoned cart is the most simple place because that's, you know, you're deep in the funnel and the purchase intent is high. But once you get beyond that, and once you have a platform that enables you to tag your customers and align that to their intent and the context of what they're doing, you can really make their experience much more memorable so that they actually remember, oh yeah, that cushion place is right, amazing. Right. they remember that I like modern cushions and they sent me all these cool design Pinterest boards. And, you know, there's just a lot of ways to engage. But yeah, they kind of break into abandoned cart. You do a welcome series as soon as somebody signs up, and that welcome series can, depending on what type of information you collected on them, whether what they reviewed on your site, or if you had an intake form they filled out when they signed up, you can create that into a really personalized experience. And then after that, you kind of work up the funnel. So if they made it to the product page and abandoned there, then you can do browse abandonment. And that can also go up to the category page. And then you can do reactivation. So if they haven't bought in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, whatever the buying cycle is. So those are kind of the money automations when you were dealing with the shopping cart.
Right. Okay. So to sum that up, that's kind of some sort of onboarding or welcome sequence that kind of acclimates them maybe to the brand, gets them familiar with maybe what else you have to offer, opportunities for cross-selling and so on. And then you have the product or even cart abandonment opportunities of, oh, they've, you know, we know who this person is. They want to go look at this cushion. They didn't buy, or they didn't even add it to their cart even. We know they went to this page, therefore we're going to put maybe some sort of delay that says, hey, if they hit that page and haven't bought within an hour or so, let's try to maybe bring them back to the page to buy, incentivize them somehow. And then like to continue the cushion example, that kind of reactivation cycle, outdoor cushions deteriorate over time. So, you know, when should they come back? When should they come and refresh their, you know, don't make them think, oh, these cushions are, you know, weathered down. I should go and look for a new cushion company. Instead, you know, preempt that, right? Like go and say, hey, it's, you know, you bought from us a year ago. It's time to think about maybe, you know, getting new cushions for your patio or something like that. And then, you know, bring them back in the fold that way. So it's more about, if what I'm hearing you say, it's more about this move away from kind of this broadcast newsletter, you know, send everything to everyone simultaneously towards more of a trigger based, you know, when this happens, do this, or when this happens, wait and then do that. And getting away from kind of this kind of one size fits all broadcast way of communicating.
Correct. The broadcast still has a place just
because, like Black Friday and stuff, right?
Yeah. And even if you wanted to, you know, if you wanted to have a monthly email that goes out to your customers, what's cool now, again, using the data and Liquid, you can have hundreds of different versions of the broadcast go out so that everybody feels like it's somewhat aligned to them when it's really, you know, one piece of content that you're just pulling in different images and different categories based on what the people are interested in. So, you know, again, broadcast emails have been with us. They never died. It's because they work even when they were unpersonalized. So the fact that we can personalize them now is going to turbocharge the return on those.
Yeah. Just makes them a little more relevant to people versus, like you said, you know, broadcast, same thing, everyone does work, but the more specific the email is, the more examples or whatever testimonials I see of people like me in that email, the more likely I am to engage with it, to keep reading it, and then ultimately to maybe click through and buy something. So, yeah. What do you see? So Drip as a company has moved towards this kind of eCRM model, e-commerce model. What is that? I know there's been a lot of the people listening do use Drip. And I think there was a bit of confusion at first about, you know, is this still, if I'm not selling, you know, physical products online, can this still help me? And I've been kind of trying to tell people, like, from what I gather from the conversations I've had with people at Drip, all that really means is just, you know, if you're selling things transactionally, if you're selling through somehow, you know, online, whether it's digital products, physical, and so on, same rules, I think, still apply. But what is that shift that you guys have made, that manifesto you released that really put front and center this change? What does that mean to the average kind of, say, consultant or agency who is selling actively this to their client? Should they only be thinking about Drip if it's a e-commerce client, or does that mean something different?
Yeah, great question. It's fundamentally the Reader's Digest version. We're there to enable people mm-hmm. to transact on the internet. And so whether you're selling software or consulting or courses or physical goods through a shopping cart, that's our focus. And it really came back to the fact previously when Rob and Derek had built up Drip, you know, they came at it from marketing automation is complicated, not that powerful, and really expensive. And so their target market was people who already knew about marketing automation and thought it was clunky and not great. So that was a decent starting market position for them to launch the product. But for us to build this into, you know, a 100-year company, we need to have a bit more focus in our message and who we target so that when people came to us, they know exactly who we're for and what we're for, and we don't look like everybody else. So a lot of the reason we went so hard with cutting who we're talking to was so we could differentiate ourselves and let people clearly understand what we're for. And, you know, some of the outcome is the existing customers were confused, which is a bummer. But when, you know, the customers that are coming in now are very clear on what we do. And when they compare us to other people like an active campaign that, you know, they're kind of for everybody, we have a differentiating point of view there. So that was the purpose of it. It's really so that we can win in the long term. But for sure, all the functionality for the B2B coaching, SaaS companies, all that functionality is still in the platform. It's still being developed. And we would never turn that off. But to win in the marketplace, we had to have a differentiated point of view that we could stand up and compete against our competition on.
Right, which makes total sense. What do you think the, in terms of the future looking forward, what do you see software like Drip evolving into? I mean, for those who aren't using Drip yet, it really boils down to you have subscribers. These subscribers have tag data, custom field data, and activity data showing things like, tags you applied, like they bought something, or custom field data, like their name or their where they live or whatever, along with activity stuff like emails they've engaged with, pages on your site they've visited, and so on. And then from that, you can then send segmented broadcasts. You can put them into intelligent workflows that have decisions within them. So if they're tagged customer, do this, otherwise do that, and then wait a period and then do that. That's kind of what, in a nutshell, Drip is at the moment. But how do you see kind of both yourself and really the ecosystem changing? I mean, do you see it more staying front and center with email, or do you see just more complexity, more functionality being built on top of that, or do you see it broadening out to, other things?
Yeah, it'll kind of become the command center for all of your marketing activities online. So we're already hooked into Facebook. Every day, Google's releasing more and more functionality to where if you have an email address, you can enhance the ads, or you can do lookalike audiences similar to Facebook. The rest of the platforms out there will continue to open their APIs so we can hook in. So it's really going to become a multi-channel marketing platform or communication platform for your customers. Mm-hmm. And in all of those platforms, you'll be able to leverage the tags and data that you have so that you know what you're talking to them about and when you're talking to them about. It's really being contextually aware of what they're doing and having the right timing.
Right.
Those are kind of big things. And so the reason we called it an ECRM was, again, in the B2C world, when Salesforce launched, they really tried to sell their CRM into the B2C world super aggressively. And it never made any sense to us why they were trying to sell it to us. And then it kind of became clear a Salesforce CRM is for managing sales teams, not customers. So it really has nothing to do with customers. And it's designed to have, thousands and tens of thousands of records in it that are mostly updated by a person.
Manually, right. I want to call with Dustin, I mark this about him or something.
Yeah. And then you can make automations and cool stuff out of it. But in e-commerce, we had millions of customers with, tens of millions of data points. And so that CRM just made no sense to us. And so that's why we call ours the ECRM, because we can consume millions of customer records with millions of data points and then automate the marketing off of it. So again, just to further differentiate ourselves and try to leverage the fact that there has been a need for a CRM in e-commerce. There just hasn't been one before. So that's the space we're playing in, and to really kind of convey it's not just about email.
Right, right. So the long and short of it is that you have, traditionally with CRM, you have the records that you put more manually of email conversations, phone calls, and so on. You annotate that record with data that you get from these conversations. But practically speaking, e-commerce and online selling is pretty low touch, where you need to have ways of getting that data in through things like behavior or something like that versus a human actually going and marking, okay, this is true about them or this is not true or whatever else. So it's really just a way of, it sounds like what you're saying is the same principles of you have a contact record, which represents a human being, where the kind of the unique ID of that is the email address. And then you have profile information about things like, whatever, maybe the, from a B2B perspective, maybe the industry they're in, their job title, job role, all these different things, along with maybe how they've engaged with you in the past, what they've purchased already, and so on. And that combines to be that CRM record, which then you can have things done based off that, like, that the setting of a certain property could trigger something that, does something with them, right? So it's really just, it sounds like what you're saying is, and this is what I thought from when I first heard that announcement was, it's just saying, traditionally with CRM, we think of that as a low volume or comparatively low volume. I know if you have a big sales team, it could be high volume, but lower volume, more higher touch way of annotating and enriching information about who somebody is and then, doing things based off that. Whereas, a big Shopify store with hundreds of thousands of customers that does not have a sales team, that doesn't do any sort of high touch stuff outside of maybe customer support, they need something a little more different for them.
Correct. Yep. Exactly. The kind of for the consultant audience out there, this concept of marketing automation is new for e-commerce, and so anybody that kind of can get specialized in it is going to have a ton of success, because one of the benefits here is we're basically taking the what used to take a marketing team of 20 or 30 people, and once you wire up the automations and you have the right data flowing in, it's only going to take one or two people to run this for a pretty large organization. So really small e-commerce companies can have the power that, you know, is really, really only for people who had funding or were doing high volume so they could afford to have the team.
Yeah. It just allows you to do at scale what works really well individually, but in a way that scales almost infinitely. Potentially infinitely. So a few more questions I have for you that I just want to, I'm curious about, especially since, you know, we have a listenership that's very consultant focused. What are some of the, you know, in terms of objections that might come through the pipeline of companies that are, like, let's go back to that cushion company where they are skeptical of the time investment of getting things set up, getting automations in place and doing all this sort of stuff. I think it would be useful to see what are some of the things that, you know, Drip is doing from, you know, from the perspective of overcoming objections that could be useful for maybe the typical agency who's effectively at this point maybe a reseller of Drip, if you think about it, right? Like they're what we're advocating them doing is to go and if a client's coming to them saying, hey, I want a redesigned website that is going to sell widgets, upselling them effectively, saying, well, have you thought about doing this also instead? Where instead of just doing a redesign, let's also add, you know, smart automation that gets people back to the site, back buying, follows up in a very strategic way. So they're in a way needing to upsell something that the client might not have asked for. Do you have any recommendations or tips around kind of easy wins, easy kind of like things that can be leveraged or, you know, things that can be said to a potential client that would get them to be more willing to take that step and to say, you know what, I would like to consider investing in this versus just getting a redesigned skin or something on my website.
Yeah. I think you would just have to approach it in kind of that ideal scene that you're talking to your customers in a way that is relevant and contextual to them and on the right time. And kind of, you know, right time, right place, that a lot of people have heard that message and kind of have never seen it happen. Mm-hmm. And so it's really happening now. And with Drip and a lot of the platforms out there, it's really easy to turn this stuff on. So you could possibly pitch them that you could turn on the abandoned cart sequence that also connected to Facebook and let them experience what it looked like to see one simple automation driving revenue. And that's easy to turn on and will have the biggest impact. And then once they see that working, I think you could probably pretty quickly get the engagement to build out the automations for the entire customer lifecycle.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think a thing that also puts a lot of companies off is thinking this is a lot of additional complexity that needs to be added. But I mean, the fact is every company I know who has any degree of high sophistication with this stuff, they started small. They started with a few different things. And over time, you know, built from there. You don't need to have kind of like your whole game plan kind of built out day one. It's one of these things that tends to make sense to do something more or less quickly, get results, build from there, and really let it grow with your success. Which is again one of the objections that I've seen is companies thinking that, wow, this is a lot to, like, they treat it like a big redesign project or something where you just have all these different moving parts and all these things that need to be thought through early on before committing to them. But honestly, most of the companies I know who are doing this well, they didn't really go into this with everything figured out. You know, it tends to be something that you start with a few different things, a few different campaigns or workflows, and then you kind of have it evolve from there.
Yeah. And the access to data and the way the platforms are consuming it now, the consultants will be able to wow people pretty easily with how easy it is to turn this stuff on. So, you know, if they're on some obscure platform that they built themselves, it'll be harder. But, you know, if they're on WordPress or Shopify. You can literally drag and drop these automations and turn them on.
Right, right. Cool. I mean, this has been, you know, I've been excited for this conversation for a while because I've wanted to hear from your perspective kind of what, you know, I was very curious to know exactly what the shift in positioning implied. And it's good to know that it really doesn't, I know a lot of people have questioned this, and it's good to hear that it's not, we're not saying, or you're not saying that you're not going to be catering to people who are not selling traditional, say, physical goods at scale to consumers online. Still just as valid for B2B, still just as valid for digital products, coaching, and services companies. But also, I think, you know, I know that for my own businesses, automation done right, as I was telling you before, is transformative. I mean, I wouldn't be able to be building Right Message if Double Your Freelancing wasn't still paying the bills that were largely being paid through automation that was set up, you know, well over a year ago that hasn't really been touched much. And I think that's the big thing. And that's the big, I think, eye opener for a lot of people is once they get this up and it's running, even though it might not be perfect day one, version one might not be the end all. And obviously you iterate over time, but it's one of these things that it's delegation. It removes the need for you to always be kind of in the driver's seat of needing to sell the next cohort of people who join your email list or whatever else. Like you can have a lot of really good systems in place that again are built up over time that automate much of this. And I think, you know, and this is something that I want to write more about, but I've been finding, at least for me, that automation is good for us as the people, you know, the business owners, the people running the, you know, the companies. But it's also, I think, better for the end customer, the buyer, because it allows purchasing decisions and things like that, when done right, to be done on their own timeline versus our publishing schedule or something like that. Whereas the old model was when everything was broadcast and everything was kind of at scale, done to everyone at once. Well, does it make sense for you to be pitching somebody who joined your email list yesterday on the thing that you know, should really only be pitched to them after they've become familiar with your company and your brand and so on? So I think it's one of these things that's good for us, but also good for them. And that's, for me, the thing I've been trying to really evangelize with people is that this is why this stuff is so important, because it's a really good way to increase permanently revenue, which is, you know, as business owners, that's what we care about. But it's also a good way to make your customers better off, because it lets you align what you're promoting to them and what you're trying to sell them on their timetable versus your timetable.
Yeah, if you can question any communication you have to your customer, whether you have context and timing dialed to send that communication, it's going to be a better experience and they're going to be more loyal and convert higher. So that's kind of a simple question we try to ask all the time. Or is there anything we can add to give us more context or better timing to communicate this message?
Well, Dustin, thank you. I know you're a busy guy, but thank you so much for coming on the show. Again, Dustin's over at drip.com, and they're the product that I use for, if you ever get an email from me, it's probably sent through them, but highly recommend what they're doing over there. And again, Dustin, best of luck with a lot of what you guys are doing. I'm really excited for you. And I think, you know, I love seeing the direction things are going. So appreciate you coming on, and thanks.
Yep, we appreciate the support.
This wraps up today's episode from season 2 of the Double Your Freelancing podcast. And again, in this season, we are full focused on automation. So I know for a lot of, especially individual freelancers, the idea of automation just seems insane. Like, why would you do that? It's just me. It's just, you know, little old me doing client work. Why do I even need to think about automation? Well, if we've done our job right, throughout this season, you've heard stories and examples and really in-depth case studies from people who are like you and using automation to power core parts of their businesses. So I would highly encourage you, if you're not doing any sort of automation yet, well, there's no better time than now. And you're going to want to go to wfreelancing.com/drip. And get an account with Drip, and it's free. You know, that you can sign up right now for nothing. Now, they're going to charge you after your first 100 leads, but think about it this way. For you as a consulting business, 100 leads is a lot, right? I mean, that's a good amount of people.
you're not asking them to buy a $10 ebook. You're asking them to hire you for lots of money. So, you know, if you were selling to hundreds of thousands of people a very cheap product and you hope that 0.1% of them will turn into a customer, well, that might be a little prohibitive. But if you're selling consulting, which if you're listening to this podcast, you most likely are, then 100 leads is a good amount. And then you're going to get Drip for $49 for your next 2,400 leads on top of that, which for most consulting businesses in my agency back when I had it, we never had anything close to that. So it's a very worthwhile investment, especially once you start to do things like automating the way that you qualify and schedule new clients and then onboard your, or I should say new project leads, and then onboard new clients and then maybe follow up with past clients. Drip can handle all of that once you get it up and running. It's just going to keep ticking and working on your behalf forever. So again, wfreelancing.com/drip, and we will see you for the next episode.